Okay, we're going to get started. It's 8:01, so I guess that means today we can't go longer than 59 minutes. As usual, please make sure to give me the 2-minute warning. It's usually advisable to give it to me 10 minutes beforehand. So. But, we'll get in what we can. It's a very important subject, the gambling and halacha. Certainly people ask about gambling quite a bit. I remember when I was working as an attorney, our law firm actually represented the world's most profitable, no, the financiers of the world's most profitable casino. It was kind of, commercial real estate in that domain. So I was in the real estate practice group at the time, and I was assigned to work on the case. So I would help to draft the loan documents, and there were also hotels, and to draft the various contracts relating to the management of the hotels. And one of my major tasks that I was responsible for, actually, was obtaining, it was on an Indian reservation, and they had certain leniencies with respect to paying taxes, which is part of what enabled it to be the world's most profitable casino. But one of my jobs was to draft the liquor license for the hotels and the casinos, so they'd be able to serve liquor on the reservation. And I was apparently so good at it that even after I left the firm and I started to work as the director of the Beth Din of America, the lawyers for the Indian tribe would call me up and ask me if I could continue to do the liquor license every single year for the casino. So I said I just didn't feel that it was completely, congruous with my current position, so I couldn't really, continue doing that particular job. But there was one time that we actually had to go on site to visit with some of the major players, who were on the casino, and we had to visit the reservation and walk inside of the casino and meet with people. And it was very uncomfortable for me because I certainly did not believe that this was a proper venue for somebody who was a Ben Torah to be, inside of a casino. Which, by the way, it's the only time in my life that I was actually inside of a casino. So, I don't know exactly what attracts people to it. It's kind of sad in a way. Because when I was there, they brought in like these busloads of older people who were in these nursing homes or assisted living facilities, and they just unpacked them from the buses, and they walked around like kind of aimlessly, just putting coins in the slot machines, and I found it kind of like a sad sight on some level. But anyway, it's just sort of a comment. So when I was walking inside of the casino, so I put on a straw hat. I used to, Rabbi Mitenki may remember when I first came to Chicago, I still had the straw hat for a period of time. And I put it on, and the attorney for the Indian tribe looked at me and said, "Oh, how come you're wearing a hat? Normally I see you with that beanie on your head." That's the word he used for yarmulke. And I explained to him, I said, "Well, as an Orthodox Jew, I just don't feel so comfortable walking around with a yarmulke inside of a casino, that I don't want to lend the appearance of this being some sort of a legitimate activity from an Orthodox Jewish point of view, because I'm just profoundly uncomfortable with it, even though I'm, one of the attorneys for the financiers of the casino. So that's why I'm wearing the hat." I said, "I can't go bareheaded, so I have to wear something." I figured, that's why I'm wearing the hat. So he was very understanding and respectful of it. Like, they didn't mind what my philosophical, religious perspective was, as long as I did my work, But that was kind of like my only, experience with a casino. When I would have interns at the Beth Din of America, so one year I had an intern who was like a smart fellow who, was learned and all that. He commented to me, I forget exactly how it came up, but he said he sometimes goes to Atlantic City. In those days, I guess Atlantic City was still around, and they had casinos in Atlantic City. And I said, "On what basis do you do such a thing? This is halakhically very problematic, as we're going to discuss if we get around to it, to go to a casino. So he said, "No, I went through the Sugyas. I went through the Sugyas, And it's a machlokes, a moroyim, as to whether it's gezeila, it's not gezeila. We really possibly like the Amora that says it's not gezeila as long as you're doing other things in your life. So, and I do it in such a way that I figured out that it satisfies all of the halakhic specifications. So I said, but fundamentally, I'm not sure you're correct. And certainly you shouldn't be so confident that you're correct. I'm not sure exactly which posek he consulted with. But I said that just from the perspective of what is appropriate for a Ben Torah, for where Ben Torah should situate himself, it's just not a place for a nice Jewish boy, certainly Ben Torah, to be. And I told him I can't use him as an aid, for example, on any, you know, Besdin matters, as long as, you know, he's still going to Atlantic City. So he told me, okay, he would stop, even though he disagreed. So I didn't feel that, I wasn't sure that was sufficient, so we still didn't use him as an aid. He was a nice fellow and all that. But I discovered that this really is something which is a problem, that there are people who gamble. And I discovered that also in a different context in the Besdin world, which is that I've seen marriages fall apart, unfortunately, because of gambling addictions. This was, you know, one of the areas of expertise of the late Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, that he would deal with addictions of a different sort and the pernicious nature of hismakrut, of addictions within the Jewish community. And this type of thing can really just tear a family apart. The gambling addiction, people sometimes go into it innocently enough, just kind of recreational gambling, and then one thing leads to another, and then it just takes them over entirely. So it's problematic. I just want to start off with kind of the overarching comment, which is that gambling is bad. Whether gambling is bad because it's a form of gezeila, is according to one opinion, that it's like stealing, or whether it's bad because a person's eino osek b'yeshiva shel olam, because it doesn't really contribute anything meaningful to societal welfare, or whether it's bad, like the Ribash says, because it's a dava hametuav umeshukatz, because it's something which is just very lowly and very despicable. For one reason or another, it's something which is not encouraged and is frowned upon very seriously within our tradition. I read an autobiography. There was a rabbi who lived in Venice in the 16th century or so, who wrote an autobiography called Chaya Yehuda. Okay, we don't have to go. It was otherwise a Talmud Chacham, but he had a gambling problem. He had a gambling problem. We wouldn't necessarily know that he had a gambling problem. He wrote a tshuva about gambling, which he was, you know, somewhat not as negatively inclined as some others, but we wouldn't necessarily have known that he actually gambled if he wouldn't have written his autobiography. But he wrote an autobiography among his other, you know, publications. And in it, he wrote on a number of occasions about the fact that he had a gambling problem. And he felt very bad he had a gambling problem. And he wrote that there was one, Shiva Sabitamus, that he just like wasted away the entire day gambling. And he has all these confessions, and he really has to do tshuva in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And, you know, he talks with great contrition, but it was clear, because the autobiography was written in sort of a diary serial form over a number of years and decades, that he was never really able to nip the gambling problem in the bud. And it was kind of a sad thing. And then there was sort of a question mark by later postgame, what do we do with the fact that he has all of this in his autobiography? Like, do we dismiss everything that he wrote because it's kind of, you know, not so impressive to have somebody who wrote Shuvos who was gambling on Shiva Sabitamus? So that was the approach of the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva in which he says that he doesn't think that we should necessarily take, you know, his tshuva so seriously. He didn't like a particular tshuva that he wrote about a different subject. So one of the ways in which he was sort of dismissing or undermining the tshuva was saying, did you ever read his autobiography? I mean, he talks about it. He was like gambling on Shiva Sabatavos. It was kind of like, you know, a sad thing. On the other hand, we also have a principle of Ainatam Mesim Asasma Russia. We wouldn't have known that he was a gambler if not for the fact that he had written this book. And he also wrote that he regretted the fact that he was a gambler. So we can assume that maybe he did tshuva. It's an interesting thing that Rav Avadya, I mean, he wrote his Shailos HaTshuvos called Zikne Yehuda. Rav Avadya Yosef sometimes quotes his Shailos HaTshuvos. He doesn't have the same approach. I know maybe you could say he didn't read the autobiography, but Rav Avadya Yosef was pretty familiar with pretty much all the books that had ever been published. and he does cite favorably from his Shailos HaTshuvos, not on every single page But, you know, five, six, seven times, certainly his, you'll find citations. So maybe he felt that we shouldn't hold it against somebody if the only way we know about it is the own admission, and certainly he did indicate a desire to do tshuva. So the sugya begins where the Mishnah in Sanhedrin and the Chuftal and Amabes, it talks about people who absum le'edus. Talks about those individuals who are compelled to serve as witnesses. This is very, very important, because this does have very serious halachah l'maaseh ramifications. I don't suspect that anybody around the table would actually ever gamble. Of course not. But there are halachah l'maaseh ramifications. I hope that's like a question that you're raising your hand for. Okay.
I'm wondering if you're aware that a lot of the day schools in the 60s and 70s actually banned using the word fundraisers, where they have once a week or once a month, bingo.
Well, we'll talk about the fundraisers. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about, you know, playing bingo, for example, in social halls of shuls, which he wasn't, you know, terribly crazy about. Even though social halls, he says, doesn't have any intrinsic kedusha, but, you know, what are you doing playing bingo? But then the question is, what about Chinese auctions? Are Chinese auctions a form of gambling, and why is it that we're so comfortable in so many different fundraising events with Chinese auctions in our community? So that's something that we really have to think about. What about playing the lottery? Is that something which is problematic? But it comes up also that I'm being Masada Kedushin for a wedding. So one of the questions, I remember when I was younger, and I went in front of a big, you know, distinguished Rav, and I was asked, in those days it was more common that friends would ask friends to be Eidei Kedushin. You could be like 19 years old and you'd be asked to be an Eidei Kedushin. Now, it's not as common. Usually you try to get big rabbanim to be Eidei Kedushin. But, you know, when I was 19, 20, so I was asked on a number of different occasions, and I remember one distinguished Rav who looked at me and said, are you Shomer Shabbos? And I was so insulted. Shomer Shabbos, you know, but that was kind of like he just wanted to make sure that he had kosher Eidei. But one of the things that you really have to be careful about as well is, does the person gamble? If the person gambles, so we're told right here, Mishnah Maseches Sanhedrin, if you're somebody who rolls the dice, they play dice games, they gamble, so they're considered to be apostle le'edus. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, when is this? This is when, specifically with respect to a gambler, we learn that this is stated. This is Bisman Sheilan Umnuselahu. This is only when the person has no separate profession. Well, I guess that if you're dealing with a 19 to 20 year old, it could be they don't have any separate profession. So it really is very halacha lemaisa. But if a person is a professional gambler, we've had such things. I've had a couple of cases in the Besdin where a person was a professional gambler. That's how they earned their income. They were professional. They were particularly good at gambling, and that's how they earned their income. About Yeshlan Umnosh Shalohu, but if the person does have a separate profession, they're just kind of like gambling on the side, they're playing, I don't know, the sports pools, and they're doing that on the side recreationally. I remember that at the time of the presidential election between George W. Bush and Al Gore in the year 2000, so there were some problems with ballots in Florida. And they couldn't figure out exactly how to count the ballots or not, and they had to determine the outcome of the presidential election, and eventually it became clear that the ones who would have to decide whether there should be an additional recount, not an additional recount, or whether they should just end the election would be the Supreme Court. And they would have to be the ones that would rule on this particular issue of, what was it, the broken chairs, whatever, the hanging chairs, the hanging chairs. So that they went to, so as the case was about to go to the Supreme Court, this didn't come out at the time, but there was a good friend of William Rehnquist, who is the Chief Justice we know of the Supreme Court, who published like some of his correspondence and letters and some of his experiences with William Rehnquist after William Rehnquist died. This was like a good friend who lived in the area, and he and his wife used to hang out with Bill Rehnquist and his wife. And he wrote an article in the American Bar Association Journal, which I happen to get because I'm a member of the American Bar Association, and usually it's very boring. But this article happened to catch my eye. It was kind of like an interesting article of their friendship. And he said, we and Bill, you know, we would sometimes have like these friendly bets, you know, that we would wager with each other. There was, you know, some money, and whoever would win the bet would win some money. And we happened to wager on the outcome of the presidential election. So at that point, William Rehnquist gave back some of the money that he had received, or the money that he had received from, you know, this other fellow they put down in the pool. And he said, I'm going to have to withdraw my bet because it looks like this question is now coming in front of the Supreme Court. This is like a very interesting question about Tkilaso v'Psul v'Sofo v'Kashrus, like, was there already a conflict of interest that was built in that could not be overcome? It's a separate, you know, Shaila, but, you know, so lots of, so that's something that even the Chief Justice of the American Supreme Court apparently engaged in a wager on the side. It was not, you know, his main umnas. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. And we have two opinions of Amoraim in the Gemara as to what the major problem is of gambling, of why it is that the gambler would become postulated. Yes?
Well, if he's not gambling, but he's setting the line, you know, he just says what the line's going to be, who's going to win, who's, what the odds are, but he's not gambling.
Well, it depends. If you're putting down money, you're not putting down money. Let's say it's just a friendly bet when you're not putting... I mean, here there was money. That's why he had to actually return the money. There was money that was put on the line. If there's no money put on the line, so then it's not... it's not necessarily a classical gambling, but as we'll see, even that could be problematic if that's something that a person does mamish all of the time. So we're going to get to that, hopefully, in a little bit. I mean, Rebbe, Refershul Shechter Shlita, likes to say, or I've heard him say this on a number of occasions, he says that, you know, gambling is not usur unless you win. You know, so that's basically the one approach. We'll see that there are different approaches as well, but, you know, the main problem is if you win. So Rami Barchama says, because it's an asmachta, that it's an asmachta, is as the Rambam says, it's a hischaibus al tanai. A person obligates themselves, but only on condition of something happens. They don't necessarily anticipate that that condition will actually happen, so therefore it's not considered like the money is really, you know, being given in a proper contractual sense, because it's not being given based on a reality that exists right now, but some condition that may or may not occur in the future. Rashi explains that asmachta is more kind of like the notion that there's a lack of gemiras das. A person that does not really intend to give the money ever, because they don't expect that this outcome that would cause them to pay the money is ever going to occur. They think, you know, they gamble on something, and they think that they gamble on a racehorse, and they think they're gambling on the fastest racehorse, you know, that ever, you know, competed, and for sure they're going to win, and it turns out that a different racehorse wins. So that's kind of something which is surprising to them. They didn't expect that to happen, so that would be the problem of asmachta. There's a lack of gemiras das. So asmachta lo kanya. Rosheshes says no. This type of gambling is not considered to be an asmachta. Why is it not? An asmachta would be, in fact, something which would not be a valid transaction. But he says, an asmachta, as Rashi explains it, which is completely labiado, a person knows that they have no control over the outcome. If it's the type of thing where you really, if you flip a coin, it could be 50% this way, 50% that way, you have no control over the outcome whatsoever. So you understand up front that there's a good chance that you're going to lose, and you put down your money with that expectation, that would be okay. It would not be considered gezel, would not be considered to be theft or robbery in any sense if the other person would then take that money. It's only going to be a problem for smachta, and the Tosfos breaks it down into different categories, which are actually codified by the Rama in Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpatim and Reish Zayin, and it gets really complicated. Because the Rish says that there are really three different categories of what could or would not be a smachta. So if something is completely out of your hands, just like you have some dogs racing, you have no idea which dog is going to win the race, or some pigeons racing, mafricha yonim, and you have no idea who's going to win. It's completely labiado. So then that's not a smachta, because you don't have any expectation that you're necessarily going to win more than the other person. So there is no kind of false expectation under those circumstances. That's not considered to be a smachta, according to Rav Sheshes. The same would presumably be true if a person entered into the lottery. They don't necessarily expect that they have a better chance than anybody else when it comes into entering into the lottery. But if it's something which, let's say, is within control to some degree, but it's also dependent upon somebody else, so then we say that you expected this other person to do what they were supposed to do, but they didn't do it, so therefore you do not have gemiras das at all. The Gemara Baba Metzia gives a case. I gave some wine, I gave some money for a person to buy wine in a certain cheap market, and the person didn't buy the wine, so then the Gemara has the din that, oh, so now the person has to reimburse me for whatever the wine is going to cost me in the more expensive market, because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. They would have bought the wine cheap. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. He doesn't owe me any money. Because who says if somebody would have sold him the wine? Maybe, you know, he didn't get around to buying the wine, but maybe nobody would have sold him the wine. Even if he would have walked into the market, nobody would have sold him the wine. It's dependent upon other people, whether somebody else would have sold him the wine. So I had an expectation it would happen, but it's not in this person's control at all. So therefore we say in this particular case, since this person, he undertook the obligation that he would reimburse me if he didn't sell the wine, but it wasn't in his control anyway. It was in somebody else's control. Therefore we say that then there would be no obligation. But let's say that it was in a person's control. Like I was given the opportunity to work on a field. And I would get a sharecropper's percentage in the field, but the owner of the field would get, you know, the majority of the yield of the field. But then I didn't work on the field at all. Now I entered into an agreement, which I said, if I don't work on the field, so there's an expectation the field normally yields a certain crop, I'll pay you that normal, you know, that crop that could have been expected. I'll pay you the normal crop that could have been expected. So we say that is a binding obligation because it's completely in my control. It's completely in my control. Normal weather conditions, had I worked the field, it would have yielded a certain crop, and I took it upon myself that I would pay this amount. It wasn't something where I expected something to happen, and then that thing didn't happen that was out of my control. It's completely within my control. So as long as the amount that I specify is a normal amount, so then it's understood that I undertook to pay that certain amount. But if I said that I'm going to pay you $1 million, like normally the crop would be worth $1,000, and I say, well, if I don't work the field, I'll pay you $1 million, so that means that I'm not intelligently or thoughtfully undertaking that obligation. That means that I'm really planning to work the field. I'm not, you know, thinking to myself, well, I can work the field and pay this amount and get a certain yield. I cannot work the field, but I'll get the benefit of not having to go to work. But I know that, you know, I'll pay, you know, whatever is a reasonable amount to pay. That's a reasonable obligation for me to enter into. But to pay $1 million, clearly I never intended to pay $1 million. It means then I was really planning to work the field, and for whatever reason it just didn't work out. Some emergency came up, or whatever happened, and therefore I would not be obligated in that particular sense. But getting back to sort of like, you know, your regular lottery type of gambling situation, where something is completely outside of my control, so then, at least according to the opinion of Rav Sheshis, as understood by Rashi, understood by the Ri, in this particular context, it would not be considered to be a smachta. So why then, the person who's a gambler, why is he pasulei? Because the person is not engaged in a contribution towards societal welfare. Why is that a problem, that he's not engaged in any kind of contribution to societal welfare? So one simple explanation is, the person therefore does not have an appreciation for commerce. The person doesn't have an appreciation for hard work. They don't have an appreciation for the honesty that goes into making an honest living. Since they don't have that appreciation, look at source Gimel. Rashi explains in Sanhedrin, doesn't understand the world of commerce, and therefore it's a very interesting correlation, doesn't have the fear of God. Doesn't have the fear of God, because it's not involved in honest living. In order to be honest, you need to first be involved in an honest living. That's the way that Rashi understands it, okay? So, therefore, what's the... I'm sorry?
Doesn't that same argument apply to any recreational activity? I mean, you know, playing chess. I mean,
well, if this is all that the person does, right? So that's what the Gemara says. My Benai, what's the difference between Rami Bachama and Mishashis? If it's a good question, I'll answer your question as well. But first, we'll give the Gemara's answer. The nafkamina would be if the person had another profession. They had another profession, so they are contributing to societal welfare. They understand how society works, how commerce works, according to Rashi. Therefore, they're not going to be pasul le'edus. despite the fact that they are involved in gambling. But according to Rami Bar Chama, even if they do have another profession, since whatever money they're getting is ill-gotten gains, so it's still going to be problematic. Now, the Meiri says something interesting to your question. The Meiri says that really, according to Rav Sheshis, you need a sort of both components. Number one, the person is not contributing in any other way to societal welfare, but they're also in specifically involved in gambling as opposed to chess. Okay, they're not putting money on the table, obviously, when they're playing chess. But they're specifically involved with gambling because when you're involved with gambling, the people that you're going to hang out with are gamblers. And gamblers tend not to be very honest people. They tend to be liars and cheats and thieves, and those are the types of people who get involved with gambling, and you're going to be influenced by them. Since this is your only influence in life, this is what you're doing all the time, so you're eventually going to become a meshakeh like them. The Sefer Yadavid asks the question, if the problem is that you're ein osek v'shivu shel olam, so what about the kolel fellows? The fellows who are sitting in kolel all day, so they're not involved in, you know, making a living per se, so, you know, shouldn't that be a problem, you know, for them as well? So the answer is, no, the Meiri says that it's only a problem if what they're involved with is gambling, because then they're involved, they're constantly surrounded by other dishonest people, as opposed to B'nai Torah and Yirei Chet. I mean, so I try to hang out, you know, in the local Batei Midrashes as much as possible, because I'm surrounded by Yirei Chet, so it's only a very good influence. The Bar Tanura, in his commentary on the Mishnah, says that what does it mean to be a contribute the Yeshuva Shel Olam? So the Bar Tanura says that you can contribute the Yeshuva Shel Olam through Torah and Gemilus Chasadim, or through, you know, making an honest living. But, you know, Torah and Gemilus Chasadim is another avenue towards being Osek Vishuva Shalolam. So certainly if a person who's involved in sitting and learning Torah and doing chesed all day, so of course they're involved in Yeshuva Shalolam. So we're talking specifically about people who are gamblers who don't have any other source of income. Now the question is, how do we paskin? Do we paskin like Rami Bar Chama, or do we paskin like Rav Sheshis? So you say, okay, so let me find out whether it's okay for me to gamble. What's interesting is that the Gemara Masechta Shabbos seems to tip the hand a little bit. That source of hay over here, and it says that Adam in Banav in Bnei Beisar LeShulchan, that you're allowed to have like friendly family raffles to give out portions of food, pieces of chocolate cake at the table on Shabbos. It's kind of like a fun activity. But you can't have some sort of a competition that people will enter into on Shabbos. Obviously, they're not giving money, but, you know, they're maybe kind of entering into some sort of a random luck kind of game, where the winner is going to get a large piece of chocolate cake and the loser will get a small piece of chocolate cake. We say, you shouldn't do that. Why shouldn't you do that? So Rashi writes, Rashi writes, my timer, what's the reason? The Gemara says, the reason is because this is a form, a misakik bekuvia, this is a form of gambling. You're not putting down any money, but the fact that you're playing a game of chance, where one person's gonna win, they'll get a big piece, and one person's gonna lose, they'll get a small piece. So we say that is going to cause you to kind of get into the mood of being involved in this sort of a gambling enterprise, and you'll start doing it for real money during the week as well. So we don't allow this sort of thing on Shabbos. So it seems that the Rambam paskins like that particular Gemara. And you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Gezeila Vaveda, that's source Zion Perek Vav, Halacha Yud and Yud Aleph. So the Rambam says, Misachik Bekuvya is considered to be Gezel Midibrayim. It's considered, this is not in the laws of who is considered to be an invalid witness. That's how it originally appeared in the Gemara. These are the laws of what's considered to be theft. And the Rambam says it is considered to be theft. It's considered to be theft on a rabbinic level, not on a Torah level. Tosfos in Sanhedrin indicates that if you hold like Rami Bar Chama, so it's going to be prohibited even on a Torah level, but the person's only going to be pasul le'eders. They're only going to be a bad witness on a derabbanan level. Why only on a derabbanan level? Because all of the cases listed in the Mishnah over there are only pasul le'eders on a derabbanan level, And in this particular case, he says it's because people think that this isn't really stealing. You're not, you know, grabbing away a person's money. It seems like they're willingly giving the money to you in the form of gambling, in the form of a friendly bet, so you don't feel like you're stealing. But since objectively speaking is stealing, at least according to Rami Bar Chama, so therefore it's only psul eidus midraban, despite the fact that it's gezel on a deraisa level. There's one opinion that Rabbeinu David quoted in the Ran, who says that even the psul eidus according to Rami Bar Chama would be on a deraisa level, but we generally assume the psul eidus according to Rami Bar Chama would only be on a draban level. Certainly according to Rav Sheshes, who says that the entire problem is that you're not contributing to societal wealth, but the psul eidus will only be a psul midraban. But the gezel itself is an interesting question. Is it a deraisa or derabanan? Tosfos seems to understand this deraisa. Rambam says it's derabanan. Is that within Rami Bar Chama? Or is he saying that even within Rav Sheshes would say, you're pasul the eidus because you're not contributing to societal welfare, but maybe he holds that it is some sort of a gezel midraban, some sort of a theft on a derabanan level. Maybe not due to asmachta, but due to other considerations, the fact that it's not a constructive activity for society, maybe that makes it gezel midrabanan. The fact that it's not, it's in an atmosphere of levity as opposed to real commerce, maybe that makes it a psul midrabanan. And the Rambam gives you a reason. He doesn't say because it's a smachta. The Rambam says, that you're taking money from somebody without really contributing for that money. You're not paying for it. You didn't do a service for it. You just gambled, and it is in the form of levity and lightheadedness. So this is, since it's not serious commerce with proper consideration, therefore, says the Rambam, that's considered to be not gezel on a deraisa level, but it's considered to be gezel on a derabanan level. Then he even adds that despite the fact that with a non-Jew, we don't necessarily have this type of a gezel derabanan, of rabbinic prohibitions of gezel. You're not allowed to engage in Torah prohibitions of gezel, but whatever's a rabbinic prohibition may not necessarily apply to a non-Jew. But nonetheless, he says, there's still a prohibition of gambling even with non-Jews. A person's going to go into Atlantic City or wherever there's casinos. Now they have casinos in Illinois. There's a big thing of opening up casinos in Illinois because they're, you know, hopeless out here in terms of like raising money for the government. So everything here is like completely bankrupt, and therefore they figure if they're financially bankrupt, why don't they also become morally bankrupt? So here they're opening up casinos all over the place. And I'm sorry?
It's all for education.
All for education. So, you know, that kind of like tells you the whole story right there. So that's the education that they are conveying to the students. Think about, you know, making an honest living, because we don't believe in that either. So now the Rambam tells you that even though there may not be an Issa Gezel, he says there is still another prohibition of Ayeshbo Issa Osek Bedarim Betalim, that there is another form of prohibition that you're involved in idle and frivolous matters, Dvarim Betalim, wasteful matters. To be involved in wasteful matters is also some sort of a Gezel Midrabanan. So you'd figure that if the Rambam understands that it is Gezel, so it's going to be prohibited, even if a person has another form of livelihood. And yet when it comes to what causes a person to be pasul le'edus, to not be a kosher witness, so the Rambam, this is source Ches on page 3, in Hilchos Eidus, Perek Yud, Halacha Dalet, says that one of the categories of psul eidus is Mesachek Bekuvya, the dice player who's gambling. And then the Rambam adds, but this is only if the person doesn't have another professional, because then the person is not involved in societal welfare. But didn't the Rambam say that it's a problem of gezel? So why would the person only be pasul le'edus if they're not contributing to a society? So there are at least three different approaches to his understanding the Rambam. The Kesef Mishnah's approach is very important. The reason the Kesef Mishnah's approach is very important, because the Kesef Mishnah had an Elias. The Elias was, he also doubled as the Shulchan Aruch. So it kind of gives you some insight into what the Shulchan Aruch was thinking when the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Rambam. So the Kesef Mishnah says that really the Rambam paskin like Rami Bar Chama. He holds that it's really, really gezel. And he holds that even if you have another profession, gambling is going to be a problem. When the Rambam says that it's only a problem if you do not have another profession because you're not contributing to society, that's when you're gambling with a non-Jew, where he says that there's not really any gezel, or you're not taking any money, you're doing it completely b'chinam. but you're not contributing to society. However, if you're actually taking the money, and you're playing with somebody who's Jewish, so that even if you have another profession, it's going to be a problem according to the Rambam. That's why what Rabbi Yosef said, if you're a Sephardi, you follow the Rambam, you follow the Shulchan Aruch, who paskin like the Rambam, so then you can't even enter into a lottery. He says you can't do that if you're a Sephardi. He says because this is going to be prohibited gambling. Whether or not it's going to make you pasalei, it's certainly prohibited gambling, and according to the way the Kesef Mishnah understands, it will probably make you puzzle le'edus as well. So others understand the Rambam a little bit differently. But the Radbaz understands that according to the Rambam, since it's only Gezel Midorot, he holds that, really he held like Rami Bar Chama, but he held that it's only Gezel on a Derabbanan level, and therefore the person normally would not be puzzle le'edus because, number one, it's only rabbinic of stealing, and the person thinks that it's completely mutter, so that combination wouldn't make you pasul eidus unless it's all that you do. So you have something which is a prohibition, it's really prohibited to do, but at the same time, it's not going to make you pasul eidus unless you do it all the time. And then you have the Sma and the Taz who say that the Rambam actually paskins like Rav Sheshis, but even Rav Sheshis who says that it's only going to make you pasul eidus if you have no other profession, would agree that there is some sort of a disdain that we have on people who gamble, that it's not something which you should do. It's still an improper and inappropriate thing to do, since at the end of the day, the other person really did not intend to lose whatever game they were involved with. So even if it's not a full-fledged asmachta, it's like a low-level asmachta or something which is inappropriate to take the money because it's a derech schok, because you shouldn't take money if you're doing something where you're not contributing, not providing consideration for the money that you're actually receiving. That is considered to be a bad midah. Now, what about the Ramah? Now, the Rama, we said, the Rama had all of these three different categories of what's a smachta, what's not a smachta. So when the Shulchan Aruch talks about what's considered to be gezel, what's not considered to be gezel, so it basically follows the party line of the Rambam, but you can turn to page 4 just to get to the Rama. So the Rama, who's on the third line of the top of page 4 in source Yud Aleph, this is in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Gezela, Simen Shin Ayin, Sif Gimel, says about Yeshlo Umno Sacheris, that if a person is a Mesachik B'Kovya, they're the dice player, and they have another profession, Afila Mesachik in Yisrael, ain't no puzzle. Even if the Ramah sounds very much like he's saying that the person is not going to be puzzled to Eidus, they're not going to be disqualified from being a witness, even if they are engaged in this activity with Jews. Because fundamentally the Ramah seems to paskin that it's not considered to be gezela altogether. Or at least he says that if you have another umnus, you're sufficiently contributing to society that it would be okay. But maybe the Ramah holds that it still is a prohibited thing to do. After all, the Ramah does not disagree with the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Shabbos. When the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos says that you shouldn't engage in this sort of lottery on Shabbos in which you're giving out the big pieces of chocolate cake to the winner, and that the one who's holding the short straw is the one who gets the small piece of chocolate cake or the small piece of steak, whatever the case may be. But here, the Ramah seems to indicate that gambling, basically, as long as a person has another profession, can even be permissible. Right? That kind of sounds like a lechatchila. He says that the minog has already spread, that it is okay to play dice. Now, does he mean the minog is spread but I don't approve of it? Then he should have said, I don't approve of it. And he says, v'ein pasul, ela misha'en lo umnos elohu, the only one who's disqualified is a person who has no other profession. Sounds like he's saying that it's okay. Now, the Ben Ish Chai in his Shailos Utshuvos Rav Halim, wrote that his interpretation of the Ramah is that the Ramah didn't mean that. The Ramah meant the minhag is that we disqualify somebody from being a kosher witness if they play dice. But the simple reading of the Ramah is that it's not only a custom that we disqualify somebody from being a witness, but the simple reading of the Ramah is that we actually hold that it is, that not only do we not disqualify somebody from being a witness in the event that they have another profession, but we also say that it is mutter, that it's permissible for a person to gamble so long as they have another profession. That seems to be the simple reading of the Ramah, in which case we have a problem because there is a stira, a contradiction. If you look in Hilchos Shabbos, this is in source Yud Ches, so the Shulchan Aruch rules, as I said, you can't divide the big pieces against the little pieces in a little game of chance that you're playing at the Shabbos table. And the Mishnah Berurah explains, because this is based on Kuvya, it's based on Mesachik B'Kuvya, and he writes, V'Kuvyu Abba Gezum B'Divrayim, Shein Daitul Aknosa B'Kinyan Gomer. These are not people who necessarily don't have another profession. Even if they have another profession, it seems like the Shulchan Aruch is saying, this is an enterprise which is a form of stealing. It's considered to be gezel midivrayim. Sounds a lot, and the Ramah does not take issue with this. The Ramah just comments on the Shulchan Aruch and talks about it. You shouldn't make a goel on Shabbos altogether, and does not disagree with this idea that you're not allowed to engage in this game of chance where somebody gets the big piece and somebody gets the little piece. So how do you reconcile if the Ramah, in fact, is saying it's permissible? So you have to realize that the Ramah, really, if you look, especially in Hilchos Asmachta, in Siman Reish Zayin, in Kol Shemishpah, the Ramah has many different requirements in order for there not to be a problem of Asmachta when it comes to gambling. Number one, it has to be completely eino biyado, as I mentioned before. It can't be that you feel like you have some control over the outcome. This would already remove from the clear-based permission of the Ramah a situation where you think that you're betting on a sports game where you have like a better sense of the outcome of the game based on your analysis of the statistics and of the health of the players and the quality of the managers, where there is some sort of skill involved in making the determination as to which team you're going to bet on, or who's going to cover the spread, or who's not going to cover the spread, where you think that you're smarter than the other guy, then you already think that it's biyado, so that might already be a problem, according to the Ramah, who says that it's only not a problem if it's an eino biyado, then you got to get to the question, is it completely biyado, is it biyadacherim to some? Biyadacherim is the worst category, according to the Ramah. And then the Ramah also requires, in Hilchos Asmachta, that the money already be put down. If it's just kind of like a vague promise, oh, I'll pay this amount of money, but no money was actually put down on the table, so that's still a problem of Asmachta, according to Ramah. Number three, the Ramah says that there has to be some sort of a kinyan. The money has to be put down, and there are various players around the table, and there has to be a kinyan where you've already given over in some sort of a transaction or acquisition the money to the other side. It has to be a situation where, for example, the table belongs to both players. So therefore, there's kind of like a kinyan chatzer that each player makes with respect to the other one's money. So some say, but Avadya Yosef has this in his tshuva. It could be that the Ramah, when he says that the Pashat Aminog, that you can gamble, that's talking about when all of these conditions have been satisfied. But when these conditions have not been satisfied, so then you're not allowed to gamble, and that's what we're talking about in the case in Hilchos Shabbos, where you didn't have a situation of a kinyan where the people owned the table, so therefore that's a case where the Ramah would not allow gambling, and in many, many of the cases, a person walks into a casino, there are so many different types of games that would not satisfy the criteria of what would be allowed, even according to the lenient opinion of the Ramah. Someone's playing blackjack, and they think that they're going to outsmart the dealer because they can count the cards or something like that. So then they feel it's more biyado, and that wouldn't necessarily satisfy the Ramah's conditions. Or if the money wasn't put down, or that it wasn't given an acquisition to the other party. So it's actually very difficult, even according to the Ramah, to come to a clear conclusion that there are certain games of chance that would be permissible. Maybe one can argue the lottery, but you know, was there a proper acquisition of the money that was given over in the case of the lottery? Maybe not. Maybe the money was never really transferred in any kind of permanent way. It's just being held temporarily by the organizers or managers of the lottery until the lottery is actually concluded. I remember once when the lottery was particularly enormous in New York, when I was working at the Besdin office in New York, which was adjacent to the Rabbinical Council of America office. So one of the rabbis there was going out to buy a lottery ticket because it was just this enormous, gigantic, humongous jackpot of whatever it was at the time, $30 million or whatever. And he said, I'm going to buy a lottery ticket for myself. Would you like me to buy a lottery ticket for you too? He was offering to buy it for me. I wouldn't even have to pay any money. So I said, no, please do not buy a lottery ticket for me, because Peshitta, I felt very uncomfortable with this idea of lottery tickets. I said, because I'm worried that maybe I'll win. So what do you mean you're worried maybe you'll win? Because if I win, then I'll have to find every single person that, you know, put down a dollar for the lottery ticket, and I'll have to pay each person, you know, all the money that they put down, because I'm afraid that it might be considered to be a form of gesel. So he thought I was out of my mind. But he didn't win the lottery anyway. And the main reason not to play the lottery is because you're going to lose. And it's much better to contribute the money to tzedakah or some sort of a worthwhile cause than to just throw out your money. You'll say, oh, well, if I win the lottery, I'll give it to tzedakah. No, you're not going to win the lottery. And you're taking money that could have gone to tzedakah, and instead you're just wasting it. And it might actually be also. Now, there are those who say, no, a lottery, according to the Ramah, is really eno biyado, and that's okay. And also, there are various arguments as to why it might be okay to play the lottery. So Moshe Sternbach gives three arguments. So we'll mention two arguments as to why he thinks that it is permissible to play the lottery. What are the arguments of Moshe Sternbach? First of all, some say that a lottery has a very, very proud tradition, right? That the Chavos Yair, of Yair Bachleff, if you look at Source Tezayin, so he quotes from the Shilos Achivos Gonen Kadmai, Shena Goel Mipish Shemayim. You have a lottery, we know that that's how the Seir was chosen on Yom Kippur, what's going to be sacrificed to Hashem. So we know that the Goel has a very proud history. The land was divided, the land of Israel was divided to a Goel, but it was a talking Goel with Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, the lotteries, like probably in Illinois, are not like talking lotteries with Ruach HaKodesh and Urim Bitumim. I'm just speculating.
Probably not.
So he said, She'ena Goel, but the Gonai Kanmai still had this very lofty notion or idea of a lottery. She'ena Goel Mipishamayim. That it has some type of hashkafe el yona. There's a special divine providence when it comes to a lottery. Shenema pia goral tekale ka'aretz. As it says, that the land was divided through a lottery. So he had some sort of a case where they were giving away a silver gold-plated goblet, and everybody gave in a certain amount of money, but then when they did the lottery, and they had one hat where they had the names of all the people who gave in the money, and then they had another hat where there's one card that says Mazel Tov and the other card say absolutely nothing. Kind of like, you know, choosing, you know, which Levium have to redeem themselves and who got chosen from the Zion, from the Shiva Mizakenim. A similar, you know, sort of approach to see who gets the Mazel Tov card, who doesn't get the Mazel Tov card. So first they had to redo the lottery because it turned out that they had put in two Mazel Tov cards by mistake. And then the second time around, one person won, but it turned out that when they looked in the hat with the cards, there were 12 participants, but there were only 11 names in the hat that had the names. One person's name wasn't in there. So the person who won the lottery said to the one whose name wasn't put in the hat altogether, don't worry, I'll give you some extra money, more than what you paid, because he was getting, you know, this fancy silver goblet, so, you know, why not give a little extra money to this person to placate them? And the person says, yeah, I'm placated, I probably would have lost anyway, and now I'm getting, you know, more rubles than the one ruble that I put in. He's getting 4 rubles instead. So the other participants in the lottery said, no, the whole thing should be redone. And the Kavos Yair said that there's a special divine providence when it comes to lotteries, but it's only if it's done right. So since this wasn't done right, so you can't count on that special divine providence, and therefore the whole thing should be done again. And everybody asked the Kash and the Chavos Yair, but what right did they have to do the... Isn't it Mesachik Bekuvya? Isn't that the problem? So one of the explanations that's given, the Rapalim gives this explanation, is that that's only when you're taking other people's money. Otherwise, your people are basically putting in money as an investment for an object. If I put in money and I get somebody else's money instead, so maybe I'm still, or I get more money from the other person, so maybe I'm stealing the other person's money. But if I'm just getting an object from somebody who wants to sell their object, and they say, I'll sell my object to whoever wins the lottery, and everybody give me money, and everybody gives him a certain amount of money, so he's getting a lot of money for his object, and that one person wins the lottery, and he gives that object, it could be a silver goblet, whatever it is, to that person, so the one who gets the silver goblet, so they're not taking money from anybody else. They're taking the silver goblet from the seller who's willingly parting with his silver goblet. So therefore, that's perfectly fine. So says that the Tshuvas V'Hanhagas, and that would be the major justification for a Chinese auction. The Chinese auction would function the same way. You're not taking the other person's money. You're taking an item that somebody is willingly, you know, selling or willingly giving away for purposes of the Chinese auction. So that's one major justification for why Chinese auctions do not violate this lottery principle. So Moshe Sternbuch says it's the same thing with lottery tickets, because the lottery ticket itself is actually a commodity. He says, "Kan konek kartis," you're buying a ticket. The ticket is worth money. I can take that lottery ticket and I can sell it in the marketplace. I'm entering into a major lottery and there's a big windfall, and now the windfall is getting more and more. I can take that lottery ticket and sell it to somebody else that has a market value. So therefore, he says, so therefore there's no type of an asmachta, since every single person is getting an object of value for their money. They're getting a lottery ticket which is worth a value. And also, he says, the fact that everyone is anonymous, it's not like you're entering into a competition with one other person, and maybe there isn't a full willingness for you to give over the money to the other person. Here, you don't know who the other person is. So you don't know who the other person is. You're willing to part with your money. Just like people are willing to lose lots of money, if there's a bust of a chalav question and they have to throw out all of their meat, but if they come to a din Torah and they have to lose like a single penny, so then they get all upset when the Rav Paskins that way. Why? Because the fact that they have to give money to Yen and they have to give it to this other guy, and they don't want the other guy to get the money. So he says, hey, you don't know who the other guy is, so therefore that's a problem. That's no problem. And thirdly, he says that the Tshuvas V'Hanhagas, that here everybody knows that they're basically throwing their money away because there's not a chance in the world that they're going to win. I don't know about that reason, because if people really felt that way, then they wouldn't buy the lottery ticket altogether. So even though people are stupid, I apologize for using that word. People are not, you know, being, you know, incredibly brilliant to think that they're going to, you know, win the lottery. Nonetheless, if that really is the expectation, if people knew for sure 100% that they would lose, so they wouldn't enter the lottery. I mean, I know 100% I would lose, so I don't enter the lottery. I also think that, you know, it's problematic for other reasons, but not everybody necessarily, everybody thinks that way.
The person feels that he's willing to spend $2 to win at 1.9 billion tonight? I mean, $2, okay.
Right, so that's sort of the attitude. But, you know, $2 here and $2 there, and, you know, pretty soon you're talking real money. And that's unfortunately what ends up happening. So Rav Avadya Yosef, based on all of these considerations, if you look at source Yud Tes, so he says, Maskana Dedina, after he brings all of the different shitas, Machaber, who he feels, you know, is following in the Rambam, who really basically says that even if it wouldn't disqualify somebody from being a witness, a person is still considered to be prohibited. It's a form of gezel midivrayim. So he says, the spadim asu lehem lishtatif pnias katise mifalapayis. He doesn't agree with Rav Sternberg, would say it's okay for spadim too. He says no. He thinks that the spadim certainly should not contribute in should not participate in the lottery. And he says, and for sure, he says that if the money is going to go, like, to fund soccer games in Israel on Shabbos, so you're also being Messiah Yedei Ovei Avera, you're contributing towards Averas. Vavaya Hodaya and his Yaskel Avdi wasn't as concerned about that. He says it's not your problem, you know, what they decide to do with the money. But on the other hand, what others decide to do with the money might actually be more of a consideration as to whether you're going to enter into the game altogether. The Mordechai...
When he says yes, he says sport.
Yeah.
Is he referring to admission to the game?
He's,
or is he talking about a lottery there too? Sports lotteries.
he's talking about, I believe he's talking about sports lotteries. Okay. I believe so. And he's saying also if the funding for the lotteries is going to go towards funding sports games that take place on Shabbos. Now the Mordechai in source 20 says that even if you have an asmakta problem, now the Mordechai is limited because, again, it's assuming that the only problem would be an asmakta problem. I'm getting the 2-minute warning. Oh, it's a 5-minute warning. Thank you. Okay. So the Mordechai says that there's no problem of asmakta when it comes to hekdesh or tzedakah, because asmakta is considered to be a feeble type of acquisition, a feeble type of gemiras das of commitment. But on a deraisa level, it would be good enough, and we rely upon that deraisa, like Yehuda said, of something, you know, happens to Binyamin, Anochi Erevenu, that was an asmachta, it wasn't clear something bad would happen to Binyamin, but he was taking full responsibility. We see it works on a deraisa level, so that deraisa law is going to still apply when it comes to hekdesh or tzedakos. It says the Piskei Choshen, but Bloy says, V'ner shagol to tzedakah, if you have a lottery for the purpose of tzedakah, most those, or to support institutions of Torah learning, so then that's not going to be considered a nasmachta problem. Even though some people really want to win the lottery, people have in mind, if they lose, they very willingly and happily are giving over the money for tzedakah, particularly if you don't create a casino environment. I think that if you create like a casino type of environment as opposed to just having a lottery for purposes of buying a Sefer Torah or giving stock or something like that, it's more problematic because of the fact that it conditions people towards gambling. So that's something that I think is probably inappropriate for shuls to be involved with. And in fact, that's kind of like what Moshe Feinstein says. If you take a look, I'll skip around a little bit, that he talks about this in terms of the shul social hall. If you look at source chav base, he named a cheder and nikra ulam mesibo social hall. She named a gam kein takas gagi chadim cheder shnusiyaka the base of Knesset. Even though it's in the same building as the base Knesset, he says it doesn't have kedusha. But if you're going to play klopim, you're going to roll dice, bingo, or you're going to have bingo, which we would consider to be, you know, relatively innocuous compared to other types of casino games. Even if there isn't a clear prohibition, it's dvarim mechuarim. It's considered to be the type of thing that people who are engaged in idle activity would perform, and therefore that's something that we should stay away from. We have a similar sentiment which is expressed if you take a look at the source of Dalit by Rav Ezer Batzri. He says that when he speaks about gambling, he says that Roy Laharif Bazeh Apodeh Shem Bazeh Gezel. Even according to the opinion that there's no Gezel, it often draws people into addiction. And then it causes people to just destroy their lives and commit suicide. And therefore it's better not to even enter into this enterprise on an irregular or informal basis if it's going to lead to those potential pitfalls. So you have to balance between the idea, you look in source Chav Zayin, the Yaskel Avdi, who talks about that if you have like a lottery for its stalker purpose, it could be a mitzvah on the one hand, with having other types of more intensive gambling type games, which could really draw people into a gambling type of affection and of engagement that could be very detrimental to their lives. And it's certainly that type of atmosphere is something that should not be created within a shul setting. So that's something that I think that we all have to be very, very careful about. There's one source that I never really understood, and I still don't understand it, but just for full disclosure, I'll share it, and that's from the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, quotes from Zundel Misalant. Zundel Misalant, you know, would have a very interesting practice, which is that he believed that you have to have bitachon, a Kodesh Baruch Hu will provide for you, but a Kodesh Baruch Hu requires a certain amount of hishtadlus. But it doesn't mean our hishtadlus of whatever it is that we're doing in terms of trying to make a living is what's really providing our income. Our income comes completely from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're obligated to show a certain amount of hishtadlus. So he would be yotze his hishtadlus by buying one lottery ticket. That would be kind of his manifestation of his shtadlus. So I don't really understand it, but I think that it is important for us to maintain that understanding that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's also important to maintain the understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to engage in honest living in terms of how it is that we make our money, even in terms of investments. So Avraham Levine, you know, famously says you should only invest in those types of stocks or options or hedges and the like that are going to contribute meaningfully to society. If it's just kind of a put a call option, it's only good for the speculators but not for society. He actually discourages it, so he takes us a step further in terms of guiding our investment activities. So we should think about that in terms of how we go about our financial dealings and how we prioritize the activities that we engage in our lives. So stay away from gambling. We'll stop here.
Is there a distinction between sports gambling and entering into a